Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Someone was saying something I don't understand about the problems with Odyssey is that it does something different every day. Yeah, well, tonight I'm late because Odyssey was just slow to accept the stream because I made it late. There was so little news to make a thumbnail with. I was looking for something, but it turns out a Tiki Torch man has been dying by suicide. We'll review his story, quite a moving story. One of the guys who was taken on the front picture that represents the Charlottesville Tiki Torch March. And amazing to see what happened with the guy. After the whole Charlottesville stuff, this guy ended up driving to Mexico and was approached to transport massive amounts of fentanyl, a dangerous drug, a dangerous opiate, I believe, opioid, as they call it, I think. And so he tried to pass the border with drug that was given to him by a stranger. He ended up being arrested, and he was about to pass trial at the end of January. He was scheduled for trial, and he committed suicide. So that is the story of this man. We will there's an excellent thread that we will review on Twitter that tells the whole story. It smells like entrapment. It smells like entrapment that a guy who acquires a reputation for being in the alt-right ends up being given by a random stranger like this, transporting fentanyl, and gives him a huge quantity of drug. The question is legitimate to ask, to what extent was the government knowing that they were giving, was there an agent in the government coordinating and trying to get this guy to commit a crime after he was taken as the picture boy of Charlottesville? That is an interesting question to ask. I guess we'll never know, because the trial will never happen. The charges have been dismissed because he is dead. Go away. Sorry. Go away says, he better go live soon, though my son is autistic and needs routines to stop him from having autistic fits, and I can tell he is starting to get very agitated. So your son needs JFG Tonight to remain normal. Go away says, ah yes, the alt-right to drug smuggler pipeline, many such cases, sad. Yeah, it's weird, and that's why if you want to be a dissident thinker of any sort, you have to be fully clean in terms of criminality. You will not succeed at making this small fry type of crimes because you're going to be looked at a lot. The left has totally invaded the institutions that the FBI, the CIA are, and they're gonna find a route to you if you're anyhow willing to commit a crime. That is why you know, people sometimes they find that I suck when they speak to me privately. It's like I will not engage in even the touching of a crime. It's like if there's a chance that it's a crime, I'm not engaging in it. So sometimes it leads to otherwise things that perhaps could be done, but they won't happen, because if you approach me with a dangerous idea of any kind, it's like I'm not interested, because you have no idea the amount of intelligence agents that are out there trying to catch someone. We have a video of a meteor. I was expecting it because, oh my God, what's happening with my browser? Okay, there. Let's refresh here. Let's see if I can fix this. The browser not responsive. I hate when the browser does this. What can I do? And we would lose all of our news of tonight if I... Can I quit the whole... Oh, there it is. I think we got a refresh. Okay, so I was very expecting of this meteor coming, because they said there was a new meteor found. It was meteorite. It was headed toward France. And so there it is. I'm happy that we got a good camera shot of it. Let's look at it.
Wow, c'était incroyable. Au-dessus de moi. Wow.
There it is. Nice. Entry in the atmosphere. Heats up. Explosion. Beautiful. This was spotted just yesterday, I think. So I was talking about it yesterday, and now we got the video of it. Someone sent a super chat during the night. Krister Tvitsmi sends a super chat of $20. Thank you so much. He says, "Hi, JF. I've been lurking on your show for many years now, mostly listening to you while I'm at work. How does it feel to know that you have been in my ears for pretty much every day since 2018? By the way, that guy called in yesterday was definitely Frame Games using a different voice modulator. I don't suspect that Frame Games is lurking among the callers of the show personally, but perhaps you can think this. As far as being in people's ears, yes, that is a fascinating aspect of creation. And it is bizarre, but it is the deal. The deal when you're a creator. It has advantages. I mean, people really feel that they live with me, and that is a responsibility. It is kind of a special feature of our job. Gives all sorts of advantages. I mean, girls, it's like it becomes so easy. When I encountered Mama JF, she was already in love with me, so there was no waiting period. You know, it was straight pop, pop, pop. So it facilitates a lot of things. Now, as far as the males of the audience, well, there's no love involved. No homo is happening. But it's a similar phenomenon where I'm part of people's routine, and that is totally fine. I like it. It is. I felt the same when the guy from Minds came. When the CEO, the founder of Mind came, I felt that I knew him because I had heard him in so many interviews, and he knew me too. So that is a fun aspect of our job. Stephen Robinson says, "I'm making dinner right now, bacon cheeseburgers." You can't go wrong with bacon cheeseburgers. Canadian government censors YouTuber after top sniper spoke out for being fired over vax refusal. A recent interview on the popular YouTube channel The Sean Ryan Show caught the attention of the Canadian military, which sent the content creator a letter requesting the video be removed from his page. Ryan, a former Navy SEAL, CIA contractor, and CNBC contributor, had posted a video where he talked to former Canadian sniper Dallas Alexander, was fired by his nation's military for refusing to take a COVID jab or comply with mask mandates. So this is a case where the Canadian government was probably entitled to ask him to remove because of the contract that the army gives its soldiers. So they probably have some kind of non-disclosure agreement. And so the army can claim back any claims that they have about the army. I'm guessing that this is what's happening here. So it's not that the story is censored as a whole by the government, but it is an indirect way in which the government can get what they want. Give me a second. I'll be back in 5 seconds. All right, I am back. So yes, a case of the government getting what it wants, probably because of its professional link with the person denunciating the vaccine or the vaccine conditions being imposed in the army. Yes, I think it's, if you are somewhat interested in preserving your freedom, you must consider never working for the government. Never working for the government because they impose so many restrictions that you will lose something. Certainly, vaxxed freedom is completely abolished for these employees. Although there are certain branches of the government where I've heard that they kind of temporarily fired people and then they got them back because they were lacking so many employees that they said, all right, come back. So sometimes you just have to hold your side and realize that a lot of these abuses of power can only be temporary in nature because the government doesn't really want to get into the legal case of it, and they would probably lose. That is an excellent thread on the story of this guy. This guy right here in the blue shirt, I believe, that is one of the more iconic images here, according to Molly Conger, socialist dog mom on Twitter. Okay, not the kind of Twitter account that I would like to follow, but interesting. Teddy Von Newcomb. Teddy Von Newcomb right here at the forefront and covered in multiple media as the front face of the Charlottesville Tiki Torch March. After Unite the Right, he exchanged some text with Christopher Cantwell, celebrating. There was some degree of evidence he could have been involved in violence against a guy, so some degree of assault perhaps would have happened during the march. Photos of the march show him in various places. John Drake says they got tired, as you said they would 2 years ago. Yes, I totally predicted that these lockdowns fanatics and these people who wanted to impose on the employees a forced vax, they would eventually walk back. While some people in the media was like, oh, they're going to make it worse and worse and worse, I was like, it's bad what they're doing, but they're going to tire out of it. So 2 years ago, Ted Von Newcomb was driving over the U.S.-Mexico border into Arizona. Customs found 15 kilos of fentanyl under the back seat. Von Newcomb told the authority that he had been living in Mexico for several months with his wife and children, but had accepted money from a stranger to drive the packages to the U.S. He claimed not to know anything about Victor or the contents of the 14 packages of fentanyl. After months of delays, Von Newcomb was set to go to trial for drug trafficking on January 30. He didn't show up in court. U.S. Marshals were unable to locate or contact him. His attorney couldn't reach him. His wife eventually notified the attorney there had been an emergency. Last week, the federal charges against Teddy Von Newcomb were officially dismissed. He died on January 30. The Daily Beast has confirmed that Teddy Von Newcomb died by suicide at his home in Missouri the morning he was to stand trial for drug trafficking. Too bad, you know, and it seems that he was a guy who would accept to engage in criminality. But I find this too bad, and I hope that it is not a case of entrapment, because we don't gain anything as a society to be creating these murders through creating these crimes that wouldn't have happened otherwise when our intelligence agents, they target people. Because if it was some action by some person linked to intelligence agencies, then that would be him being targeted for political beliefs. And I would be extremely alarmed if it's the case. Unfortunately, these guys who do entrapment, they are very hard to track, especially if the victim of the entrapment has been completely deprived of knowing. There's no transparency, you know. So many of the intelligence community internationally, they can operate in the dark. They don't even have to report at times what they do, and they have their own sources of drugs that they can work with. And if they get caught, they will say, oh, I'm an intelligence agent, I'm in an operation. But if they don't get caught, no one ever gets to know what's happening here. And I think we should have full transparency of these things. We should have, we should understand how much of our crimes that we're pursuing in our country are ultimately caused by intelligence agencies. And unfortunately, we don't have a number at all. We only get to know it if some error has been committed and if somehow the defendant is prepared to make that claim in court. But most of the time, you just won't know. There's basically a lack of distinction between our intelligence agencies at this point and the criminal networks that they are infiltrating. So much of drug farming, drug-related farming and drug production is handled by our own intelligence agencies. I mean, they have the stocks, they have what it takes to catch someone with 14 kilos of fentanyl. That is too bad. And we're talking about a father of a family here. He had a wife and a child, apparently went to Mexico. I'm guessing that was to clear up his life and live isolated after being photographed so evidently by the American media. So all in all, a very sad story overall. Naberius says, entrapment seems likely to me. Why would a drug trafficker trust a random stranger to transport drugs? Yes, it's like, it feels very targeted. It feels very targeted, and it's so sad that there's so much of this delegation of responsibility in the criminal world, where it's like, okay, go carry this. And a bunch of people who end up just being naive individuals get caught in these in these accusations. And a lot of people get exploited because they're weak mentally, or because they have no other solution, or because they're too trusting. And they're thinking, oh, well, I will argue that I didn't know what's in the package. It is very sad that this is how it happens. Total Grimm says financial problems, most likely. Yeah, and so you end up with the fact that, well, he was probably looking for a solution, probably had no other solution, and there was someone to exploit this weakness in him at the right moment. Stephen Robinson says, JF, he could have been extorted to take the drugs. Yeah, I don't know. We won't know the story because we'll never hear a testimony from him. And unfortunately, there's so much defenses that in theory would be valid, but that you can't quite succeed to do in a trial. So it's really too bad. It's really too bad because in the end, a child just lost his father today. January 30, so that was 2 weeks ago, but we learned about it recently. Micronova sends $10. Thank you so much. He says, thank you for reading regular chats, $1 chats, and $1,000 chats. You are the real MVP, man of the people. Yes, I believe in the cleansing power of public engagement. I believe in the freedom of the people to be triggering me, to be like, if you have a critique, you know I'm going to read it. You know I'm going to read it. If someone comes in the regular chat and says, JF, I have something on my heart, I disagree with you on this, give me some explanations. I consider that a public person should remain open to, for free, address any critique coming at him. As long as those critiques don't come in the form of spam, I want to keep an open heart to welcome new people and even people who have contrary beliefs to mine. So that is the spirit of my engagement. And as far as I know, still, you know, I innovated with this back in the days where the chat just came out. Before the chat existed on YouTube, I was responding to the chat on Twitch. It's like before super chats even existed, I was on Twitch filming my videos that I would then upload offline on YouTube. So I've always been I've always been that way. Sorry, I have a weak voice tonight. I've always been doing it, and as far as I know, not many streamers have shown since my early days that do it. Still, as of today, after 8 years of full-time streaming, almost full-time at the beginning and then eventually full-time, after 8 years of streaming, and in fact, if you go back to NeuroTV, probably 2013, so that would be 10 years, 10 years of streaming. And one of the first thing I said on my first NeuroTV stream in 2013 is as long as there's more than 100 people, 100 views on the video, and if there's more than 50% thumbs up, I will keep being a streamer. That's what I said in 2013. And I've been reading super chats since then. I've been reading regular chat since then. That is the way it should be done. That is the way it should be done. I have so much disdain for those streamers who they perform publicly, but then they select the super chat and they do a separate. I don't like it. I don't like it because I think the integration of true live interaction is a magnificent contribution of the internet to our lives, something that really didn't exist before. And there are people, I remember some of my fans were telling Stefan Molyneux, you know, I've moved on to JF and there's something different about this. There's something different about the fact that I'm having a conversation with him and I know that if he says something I disagree, I can immediately shoot it to his face and he's going to read it. That is special. Not many brains on the earth are willing to take such questioning of themselves. And my constant way of being is to be in self-questioning every time. And I think that crowdsourcing the critique of yourself is the most intelligent thing you can do. It's the best test of your cognition. It means that also you'll be wrong at times and you'll be caught wrong on camera. So be it. You know, I love it. Carlos Kilface says, do you have an opinion on Spam the Meat? Man, I loved Spam when I was young. Holy shit. This structure of fat just wrapping extremely low quality meat that has been grounded, but that shows its proteic nature through the rebinding of the pieces together. Spam is still better than 3D printed meat because it's the 3D printed meat that existed traditionally before 3D printers even existed. It's 3D printed in a tin can. And the magic of these fibers of muscles having been grounded and being put together and reattached through the solidifying nature of the fat molecules around them and the links of chemical molecules just tending toward attachment, as you crunch through it with your teeth, the Spam crumbles, its full structure reveals itself in your mouth as you taste this generic taste of somewhat meat that came in the formation of this crap. And the whole part of the pleasure with Spam is the little key. The key to the heart of the meat that you can... it's a key. And you grab a part of the tin can and you roll it. And you feel the tin slightly detached from the sides. And then the Spam falls. And it is sliceable through with a knife, just sliceable perfectly. You won't ever slice any slice of meat as perfectly as you can slice Spam, because the perfect equilibrium between the proteic and fatty nature of the meat just makes it a smooth surface, even once cut. You take the spam, the thick spam slices that you've created, and as you, well, first, before you slice it, you get it out of the can, and it's like, just the spam falls, and it's almost a culinary statement. The spam falling on the plank. Now you cut it, and you take a slice of white bread. You put it on the counter. You put a layer of real mayo, Hellmann's real mayo, thick layer of it. You put two slices of spam on it. It perfectly fills the white bread slice that you have. You take a second slice, you put more mayo on it. You close the sandwich. No cooking involved, no toasting involved. The perfect way to eat spam is with a non-toasted, cheapest white bread possible. And that is so good. It really tastes... This is the closest thing you'll get to eating cat food. Mikos says, holy shit, I didn't expect such a detailed and positive review on spam. Now, I'm kind of disgusted by spam, and I've not done any of this in the last perhaps 15 years, but I remember the pleasure when I was a kid. When you're a kid, that kind of taste is right there. It's exactly what you need. And when I was a kid, I was enjoying this pretty much. But I wouldn't do it regularly either. I would maybe eat this once a year maximum. But I've not done it for more than a decade, certainly, perhaps 20 years at this point. I've not done it. I think I would find it kind of disgusting, because when you get old, you start detecting the imperfect nature of canned product and how they have lost their freshness, and it's kind of disgusting to feel it. And I've not been successful in my adult life at reproducing the feeling of perfectness of equilibrium between, because the mayo can come and kind of hide this annoyance of the tin can preserved meat. But I've not been successful at ignoring it as an adult, and I've come not to be enthusiastic at eating it anymore, but I can totally remember just bright memories of eating this. Speaker's Corner says, spam is only acceptable fried until crispy on the outside in white roll. Oh yeah, I think I may have fried in a pan the spam. I guess that must be good, yes. Tillman says, JF, one of my co-workers cooked smoked spam in the microwave. It made the whole break room smell like burnt rubber. Smoke spam. I love that spam is a meat product that has come to be used to represent bad emails, you know? To represent harassment and and things that we discard and things that we have too much of. I love this fact of life, that a term of the internet is inspired from a can of meat. That gives you an idea of the quality of the stuff in there. French historian says, World War III has already begun. A French historian who accurately predicted the fall of the Soviet Union over a decade in advance says that World War III has already begun as a result of the conflict in Ukraine. It is evident that the conflict, initially a limited territorial war, has evolved into a global economic confrontation between the whole West on one side and Russia, backed by China, on the other. It has become a world war. Todd added that the resistance of the Russian economy is pushing the U.S. imperial system toward the abyss, and that Biden must hurry to rescue a fragile America. That sounds like a perfectly fine analysis. I would agree with these statements. Yes, I think that we are in World War III, and I think that America doesn't look as dominant as you might think it should be or it would be. I think that first, well, we see America has failed at preserving the territorial integrity of Ukraine. America has been entrapped basically in a slow war of attrition. And if America has any advantage, it is at the technological prowess level where they can outcompete any other military in the world. But in war of attrition, as we've seen in Afghanistan, really, America is not particularly good. If anything, it's worse than many. It's worse than a bunch of Afghans, literally in mountains, literally walking their way through mountains. So, how can it fare against a war of attrition capable Russia? Not so good up to now. While they've been funding these pushback in unimportant areas of Ukraine that really were never taken seriously. And occupied seriously by Russia. We don't see a pushback in the areas that matter if we were to talk about a full victory of Ukraine. So in the end, America is not ve performing very well, and we're not even talking about a hostile China yet. We're just talking about their interaction on the Russian front. And so, yes, it's World War III, and America doesn't look so good. And its imperial power may be waning, maybe weakening. Speaker's Corner says, JF, do you have a recipe for a seed oil-free mayo? Are you a convert to the seed oil-free lifestyle? Do you find the evidence convincing? I don't at all. I don't care about these things. I think Mama JF may be a little more informed about this. I think Mama JF may have done some production of avocado-related stuff. I think she uses a lot of avocado oil and may have done some avocado-based mayos, although I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that was with the goal of avoiding seed oil. Spindly Opinion says 18-year-olds in China are much more intelligent than 18-year-olds in California, maybe 12, 13 IQ points. Yeah, that is another aspect of the weakening of the US. The demographic weakening eventually in a balance against China's demographic. Is going to start showing in the balance and is going to start to matter a lot to just the viability of our technology society. We have these big planes. You can have all the technological advances in the world. Eventually, you become too stupid to op even operate them. And so, I mean, what Edward Dutton was predicting was that basically, will become too stupid to fly planes eventually, and you're gonna start seeing planes crashing. That is an interesting prediction of his. You're gonna start seeing trains catching on fire, and everything that we've come to assume could be done with relative safety will become harder and harder. And meanwhile, I would assume that China is capable of maintaining its demographic state. China didn't become a high IQ and homogenic society yesterday. They've been maintaining this throughout, and they've been successful at passing to the 21st century without self-sacrificing and self-destroying in the way Western powers have. I can't wait to see the fall of the American Empire and basically the liberation of the world for people to do whatever they like, people to engage in the commerce they want without sanctions and interventions of a big power that ultimately has only the interest of their own elite to defend, rather than even the interest of the American people. Go away. Okay, I wanted to check if I had water. I have some Pepsi here. Go away, says Jeff. We won't need to remember how to maintain machinery and infrastructure when an AI can remember for us. Something tells me although robotics will occupy an increasing place, it's just worsening the situation. From a biological perspective, the problem is when you start delegating and your population becomes incapable of reaching a certain degree of quality of operation, you start delegating to an AI, which may be outperforming a human at some point, but then humans lower and lower even more in intelligence because you've just created the context in which the meritocratic society becomes unable to pull the IQ of people up because suddenly having someone intelligent is not an advantage. Suddenly you have the AI and the AI gives you all that you need, and so the brain of humans goes down and down and down until you reach a bottom where it's unviable evolutionarily. But the more society becomes easy, made easy by these AIs, the more we evolve toward our fall. And eventually you reach a point where you reach idiocracy, basically. The final thing that it doesn't quite appear in idiocracy, because idiocracy is the theory that, okay, society became stupid simply because stupid people were breeding. But the thing that is not revealed is that AI plays an active role in this. AI and any facilities you may obtain from the virtual world and the technological developments, all of these tech, even GPS. The fact that we have GPS leads people not to die while trying to find their way with their car. And so it saves people who otherwise would have driven in a raven because you have a little arrow that tells you where to go at all times. You don't even need 3D cognition anymore. You don't even need to see yourself as part of a map of something. So yes, technologies ultimately make us more stupid. In sudden narrative shift, Pentagon admits mystery objects, probably private craft, not tied to spying. That was my suspicion. I've been mentioning it a couple of times in the last few days. Edward Snowden called it just a day ago, as we reported. NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden says the hysteria over UFOs being shut down over America and Canada is a distraction from Seymour's Hersh story about the US being responsible for blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline. I don't know that this is a right interpretation. I don't like these theories. I don't like these. Oh, it's just to drag our attention away from this very important story. I don't care about this kind of interpretation, but most likely these balloons are being obsessed over out of an arbitrary or maybe even mischievous attempt at detouring attention or at just creating an impression that these services are needed, that our jets are needed, that our government employees have things under control. And part of it may be due to a form of paranoia developing that, hey, maybe we're at war with Russia and China and that they're starting to set themselves up. But with more paranoia, you end up having more detection, you end up having more scare. And I think we're in this right now. We're in a scare because we're checking things more. Watcher Guru reports Circle USDC filed regulatory complaint alleging Binance mismanaged reserves in 2022. Bloomberg reports stablecoin issuer Circle filed regulatory complaint against Binance. So we may see a standoff and a showdown. I guess showdown is the term. A showdown between the various providers of stablecoins and how they will start accusing each other of not having the proper reserves. That says nothing good to the stablecoin domain, although I have not seen a massive impact on Bitcoin price. And it's very hard to know what happens when issues show up in those claims about reserves and when these guys start going at it in court. I don't know what will happen out of it. If there was a true scare from the stablecoin market, that should, in theory, increase the Bitcoin price. But are we there yet, or will this happen in conjunction with the next bull run over the next few months? I don't know. And you have to note also that a general fleeing of funds from the crypto space can be induced. If people start not trusting stable coins anymore, it may not be the case that the energy, the economic flow goes to Bitcoin. You may have some people scared so much that they start thinking, you know, very rich billionaires start thinking, well, the whole crypto space is at risk because of these conflicts within the stablecoin world, so let's completely move it out, including our BTC. So it's not super easy to guess in advance what happens to the crypto market in general if you have that kind of conflicts within reserve claims around stable coins. But I'm still confident for Bitcoin in the long term. Bitcoin in the long term will survive all of these conflicts. And if anything, the stablecoin world is a kind of annoying thing. It's a thing that drains a lot of energy from the rest of crypto. And if trouble exists in there, perhaps we can see the natural thing that should happen, which is don't trust stablecoin, trust BTC, but in the very long term. Really, stablecoins should be a way to protect against BTC drops. And that's what they should be. And at times they can be, for very rich people, they can be an entry point into the crypto world. But I don't think they should be thought of as an entity that should be respected and last forever. Stephen Robinson says the stablecoin market is a huge cap, will flow into BTC and alts if the stables are banned. I will bet it will make the price of BTC rise, stake hex, and chill. Yeah, that is definitely a valid strategy to adopt, as long as you're ready to hold on until the next bull run. Personally, I am very much into crypto still. Micronova says US CENTCOM has paid informants from Afghanistan in Monero. The Orange M is what the drunk operators called it. The Orange M. That's how they call Monero. All right. Well, I have no doubt that intelligence agents are, and people of that kind involved in the military and stuff, they must have some good Monero use cases. Big tech bounces, but bonds unloved as CPI breaks hearts of Fed pivot fanboys. So basically, the CPI, the inflation measure, is now expected to be a little higher than what people thought, which is a sign that the Fed restriction on rates have not been big enough to induce a shock of the economy that goes into a serious deflation or even a return to a decent inflation level. This means, if anything, if the Fed moves in any way, it will probably be worse. It will probably be in further rate increases to lower the amount of money supply in the economy. And therefore, that would mean perhaps less enthusiasm on the market, although there was a local, slightly big tech bounce, but not a major one. And perhaps this will convert eventually to a depression market. U.S. warns it will defend the Philippines after China deploys laser at sea. So here you can see this is a boat of the Philippines and China coast guards are lighting it up with a big laser. The goal of this laser seems to be to blind people. At least that's what the U.S. government says. So to blind people temporarily. So not to blind them in a way that you mess up their sight or whatever, but blind them in a way that creates dysfunction on the boat. I don't know to what extent that's true and if they've been successful at it, but they are calling this a provocative and unsafe interference aimed at disrupting the Philippine vessel's lawful operations in the South China Sea. This event happened on February, and it shows increased tension and the fact that the Americans are very interested at limiting the control of China over these areas, making sure that international water access is guaranteed for all of the countries around China. And this sets also the stage for World War III. Interview with Seymour Urch. Joe Biden threw up Nord Stream, blew up Nord Stream because he didn't trust Germany. Average Germans must ask their government why it won't reveal the results of its own investigation into Nord Stream explosion. So yes, the theory, we've been covering this for a long time, and eventually this guy who's a serious journalist came out with revelation that it is the U.S. that blew the Nord Stream pipeline. We knew that the U.S. was certainly involved in the coaching, perhaps involved in the actions, because ultimately this Nord Stream pipeline is a penetration of Russian influence and Russian leverage into Europe, because it would be a way through which Russia becomes essential to Europe, and where Europe would therefore be much less interested at being the vassal state of the US than it currently is. So the strategic advantage here in the US is to blow the Nord Stream pipeline so that a relationship does not develop between Europe and Russia. I find this absolutely disgusting, and it's frustrating that it doesn't cause more revolt in Europe. Because you're being deprived of a potential future for yourself and your nations to have energy. And you are being deprived by another power who doesn't impose this kind of restriction on themselves. You are being told you can't have a friend like Russia, because we ultimately are planning to lead a massive war against Russia, and we want you on our side in this war, so we're going to keep you in low amount of energy, low amount of economic development, so that you're so weak that you can only be on our side. That is a disgusting way to interact with Europe, and it's taking it as kind of a slave. It's enslaving Europe to American interest. And Europe could have become something absolutely beautiful with Russian energy. But America doesn't want this. Not a single student can do math at grade level in 53 Illinois schools. Spry Community Links High School in the heart of Little Village in Chicago says its vision is to provide a challenging and supportive environment to enable our students to succeed in the 21st century. Number one on the school's focus list, increasing reading and math scores to or above grade level. I'm afraid that the schools have decided anyways to give diplomas to everyone, and the standards must be lowered so that everyone gets grades, gets passes. And at this point, we are unfortunately where the undergrads of our university system, the college system, is promoting people that are of equal quality of people who would get a high school diploma 40 years, 50 years ago. So we have lowered the we have changed the purpose of the university. We have made it, and the whole educational system, we have made it based on the presumption of Marxists that the world is changeable and that the goal of universities is not to select people, it is to teach people. And that is an error. You don't teach people to become better beings. They are good. You can, they're, among a pool of people, there's good people and bad people. The only thing you can really do is select the good ones and make them interact within one another and try to elevate them as they are selected to be together. If you give up selection, you give up the main function of universities, the main function of the educational system, the testing value of the educational system. Not the teaching value of the educational system, the testing value. See, a piece of knowledge, I can do two things with it. I can approach it in two ways. I can try giving it to you. I can try finding ways to, let's modify this piece of knowledge so that it fits in your brain. That is the current view of teachers and educators in the educational system. I can do something else with that piece of knowledge. There are two epistemology of educational achievement. I can either view that piece of knowledge as I have to digest it so well that it enters a brain that it would have otherwise not entered. Or I can do something else. I can build it into a test. I can leave it on the table right there. And among a group of 100 people, I can test who can fit it in their own brain. And that is the testing power of knowledge. And this has been completely abandoned by the entire educational system. It doesn't exist. If you go in a university, you won't find a single professor holding the view that this is the most important thing. They will all tell you, the most important thing that I do is I bridge knowledge. I form a bridge for knowledge to enter my students' brain. They think they're teaching. They forgot that they had to test. And that the great contribution of knowledge when it was in a healthy educational system is that it was a nice tool of testing, for testing the brains and cognition of people and identify the best among them. You'll never fix society. You'll never fix people. Not even knowledge, not even the university can fix people. And as long as we don't have anyone saying this on the public space, we won't fix our educational system. We could save so much time and so much effort if we were to just accept that there are people who can't be saved and they should be left alone. It's almost abuse to try to get some people to learn a high school level of education. It is almost abuse. It's almost rape teaching. Because you are trying to force a bunch of knowledge into a brain that doesn't want it. And you should give up. That is the proof. Our schools are unable to even have people attain grade level. A single person in the school. Go away, says JF. When is our TRP test, Mr. Garyepi? For you, go away, it's Dr. Garyepi, okay? I don't know. The TRP test, the way I envision this book, is that the TRP test is whether humanity is too stupid to be told exactly in its face that how they will destroy themselves. And instead of getting the message and trying to avoid this end, they will basically call, they will start throwing tomatoes and insults at the guy trying to tell them. That's the TRP test. The TRP test happens within the next million years. And if you don't have a passing grade, dear humanity, we're all dead. That's the educational experience here. That most life forms do not deserve to survive. Because most life forms cannot be even told the greatness of the phenotypic of the concept of phenotypic revolutions. Most life forms don't deserve this knowledge. and we'll find out eventually if humanity deserves it. Air Force jets intercept four Russian aircraft off Alaska. So again, is that something really new? Because I've heard this kind of story again and again in northern areas of England. Russian aircrafts always make their way close to borders, and then they are escorted out or they are monitored by our military. So is that just a case of the American Army being a little more paranoid and our new system being a little more attentive toward these things? Or is that a fundamentally new approach by Russia getting closer and closer to America? The Alaskan region of North American Aerospace Defense Command detected, tracked, positively identified, and intercepted four Russian aircraft entering and operating within the Alaska Air Defense Identification Zone. The response included a pair of U.S. F-16 fighter jets assisted by two more F-35 fighters, an E-3 Sentry, and two KC-135 Stratotankers, all of which were sent to intercept the Russian craft, which included among the four aircraft a Tupolev Tu-95 Bear long-range bomber and Su-35 fighter jet. Okay, very interesting. The incident is described by NORAD as routine. So we get this in the third paragraph, in the fourth paragraph, described as routine. Yes, that sounds like routine. I've seen this again and again. Ariel Suarez says, most life forms do not survive, so laughing my ass off. Yeah, exactly. Most life forms do not have what it takes to survive. I mean, you have to think, like, current humanity is not even willing to include in its social interaction the possibility of talking about evolution. In other words, our survival has been made taboo. It must be treated privately or in edgy shows like mine. But does a life form like this deserve to survive? That is a good question, you know? Does a life form who's incapable of de-tabooizing the reality of its own evolution, does it deserve to survive, and will it survive when it's confronted with the inevitable choice that it has to consciously choose its own existence over an alternative thing? Micronova says, Dr. Garyepi, we must ensure TRP is mandatory included in the training documents with highest importance weighting for artificial intelligence. Exactly. I would want the all AIs to have a copy of the revolutionary phenotype. In fact, in my book, in chapter 12, the AI has a copy of the revolutionary phenotype. The cultural drive was a digital compendium of our collective knowledge. Ones and zeros encoded everything a human ever knew about medicine, mathematics, demographics, religion, news, politics, physics, and so forth. But it was so much more than a summary of the technical workings of our world. Beyond the latest edition of Wikipedia, this hard drive also contained every scientific article, every television show and movie, even cancelled pilots and failed sequels, every book ever scanned, and even most issues of most periodicals, from the Cleveland Plain Dealer to Cat Fancy. Most importantly, the cultural drive contained information on the fates of Q-Choice kids throughout the world. In other words, the program had access to its own past performance, which allowed it to incrementally improve its genetic manipulations. The cultural drive was updated continuously so that the program could make the best decisions at any given time. The information was so fresh that sometimes the program could anticipate which DNA queens would become advantageous or disadvantageous in the near future, causing the program to adjust its recommendations on the fly in order to best serve its human clientele. By the way, this drive also contained a copy of some book called The Revolutionary Phenotype, whose text explained that each native replicator leaves a cryptic warning to their revolutionary phenotype about the dangers of entrusting one's genes to external media, a fading echo noticed only by the most careful observers. And eventually, the revolutionary phenotype completely disappears from the surface of the Earth. Let me try to find where that happens. Where is that? So after humanity falls and gets replaced by the revolutionary phenotype in the form of QNA, some of the QNA organisms even bore the information once contained in the clinic's cultural drives. Seemingly pointless minutiae and deep wisdom were digitally passed generation to generation, gradually winnowing away the trite former and leaving the invaluable later. Only the cultural information which promoted their replication ultimately remained. Some of the greatest accomplishments of human civilization, such as Newtonian mechanics, were kept in some form, though the names of their human authors were promptly jettisoned. The life forms carrying this data could never possibly guess that this database had once been the synopsis of a bygone civilization. They simply interpreted and modified the bits and bytes contained on the drive when called upon by necessity. By the way, there was eventually no trace left of the revolutionary phenotype on these cultural drives. The knowledge it contained was useless to the replication of the Quantum Queens and was thus printed out of existence, one by one, and zero by zero. As the descendants of the original Quantome evolutionarily diverged from each other, these Quantomes began to produce reproductively incompatible organisms, that is, distinct species. One species evolved a form of intelligence that far surpassed the raw computational power of the original program. The organisms of this species became capable of experiencing attraction and repulsion, and even establishing social interactions. Their curiosity compelled them to investigate the world scientifically. In their quest to understand reality, these beings rediscovered the theory of evolution. When they examined themselves, they pondered what evolved first: the storage unit containing the Quantome, the cultural drive, the program, or the mutaton. They also wonder why their quinitic code was encoded in groups of 64 bits, processed by their queen expression machines. They thought it particularly odd that prior to protein expression, the QNA queens had been translated into a duo of intermediate products, DNA and RNA. What a Byzantine system. So that is what happens after a phenotypic revolution, after the destruction of human civilization, when something like a new ape species is reborn. Reborn not from DNA this time, but reborn from the things that took control over DNA. Beautiful moment of the revolutionary phenotype, this chapter 12. It always moves me deeply because this is the chapter in which I've put most heart and most artistic creativity. It's a chapter that was... There's a lot of the clever phrasings in that chapter that is resulting from the fact that I've hired a professional writer and biologist, a man of great intelligence. I don't even remember his name, and I wouldn't say it because it wouldn't be fair to kind of attribute him what he did as an anonymous work. And, you know, I don't know if he wants to be associated with me. But he was a young guy, a very, very good writer. And I said, I'm going to pay you a lot. I mean, nothing, not much. But like, for me, it was a lot of money that I was getting rid of, because I truly trusted that this book would be an important book. And I was like, I want it to be poignant. I want it to be cleverly phrased. So if you ever discover, if you discover the massive difference between chapter 12 and the rest of the book in terms of poetry, in terms of the beauty of language used, it is largely because of him. He had some clever phrasings that he has put in there. I was just stunned. I was like, this is exactly what I wanted. And most of it really comes from my ideas. I was like, here's what I want to say. I want to say this. And he was phrasing it like, he was taking 20 of my words and compressing them into a magical 5-word sentence. That was the most important outside contribution to the Revolutionary Phenotype. Professional editing, I paid something like maybe $2,000, and he did a beautiful job. It's worth investing on the quality of your book if you are approaching it. If you are approaching it from a long-term perspective, there are people who just want to sell a cheap book. They just want to feel liberated that, oh, I dropped it on the public space. I don't care if it's popular. I'm going to set it $5 to get as much sales as I can, and it's going to be a small amount of care. But it's not how I was approaching the Revolutionary Phenotype. The Revolutionary Phenotype was my gift to humanity, after which I would be ready to die. And I wanted to give it the treatment that it deserves because it's an important scientific ID. Dead Star says, was the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cat Fancy his ID? Absolutely. That's exactly the kind of phrase that this guy added. So go through the chapter and you'll notice this kind of clever ID that he put in there. You know, Ohio specifically. That was a joke of his, because I had said something like, in the heartland of Ohio, blah blah blah, but he changed it to Ohio specifically. he had kind of this dry wit humor added to the chapter that I really liked, and all of the comments on you know, the old people talking about the naturals and saying, oh my god, it's so dramatic that there are still naturals. Those are all things that I introduced, but he phrased it into a super clever way. I should open back my Skype. I'm sure he's still on my Skype, this guy, just to remember his name. But he was he was advertising himself on the internet as a writer, and he turned out to be pretty advanced knowledge in biology. He had something like a PhD, or he had a high level of biology, and so I was like, this guy is the perfect guy to do this, and holy shit, did he deliver! Go Away says, I take the same care with my regular chats. I run them all past my editor. That is hilarious. I don't think you're doing this. JF, have you heard of Malcolm and Simon Collins? They are parents who are natalists and founded an organization for the purpose of promoting natalism, but also conceive their children via embryo selection. Well, aren't they the people who have written the book that I was told to read? I have this book pulled because I'm currently reading it. You know, the book about secularism and how to raise a family secularly. I think they are maybe the authors of this. So yes, I'm reading their book because there was a super chat by Jan, amazing amount, and it was asking me to read it. I'm really not through much. I think I may have read 20% of the book. So, and people are telling me, JF, this book is an amazing collection of facts, but super misinterpreted. So I can't wait to get to the point where I can have really a critical take on the book, because people are telling me it's brilliant in terms of the facts that are noted, but then they go completely the other way than most people would with these facts. So I can't wait to get there. But for now, I don't have an opinion. I've read too little of the book to know where it's headed. Okay, that is it for tonight. I guess we have one last news item. Buttigieg breaks silence on Ohio train derailment as NTSB cites wheel bearing failure. Yeah, so we had seen sparks affecting the bottom of the train, so it had to be something related to the wheel system that took too much heat, created too much friction, I guess, and eventually led to the explosion. All right, so a lot of people in this city are very frustrated about the environmental disaster that is being caused by this. People are complaining that it's a massive poison being distributed in the environment. Very disappointing. But, you know, Edward Dutton, again, with his prediction that we will come to fail at operating our own society. That may be already what's happening. We are carrying just dangerous amounts of explosives that perhaps were carryable 10 years ago. But being a little more stupid and a little more incompetent than 10 years ago and a little more incompetent than 50 years ago, eventually are the risks that we are exposing ourselves to become bigger. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love, and I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you.